Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 11th day of November, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things, cheers, nothing loose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. But before we get to that, it is Veterans Day, and I want to personally thank all the people like Dave who put themselves in harm's way.
My wife,
to
Shirley.
To protect our freedoms. Yeah. And Shirley.
She always gets upset when we go someplace for, you know, veterans and they assume it's me.
Right, right.
I suppose that is a natural assumption. It's the man, not the woman. But we went to...
That hasn't been true for 30 years.
Right. Well, that's when she was in the service.
Right. Yeah.
But we went to the Parenton Fireman's... band concert at the Parenton Shell last year, and they had a big salute to the veterans, and they had all the different branches stand up, and I really liked how many women were standing up.
There's
a lot of women veterans in the Parenton area.
Nice. Anyway, thanks to each and every one of you for putting yourselves in harm's way for our freedom. Thank you very much. So if you know a veteran, be nice to them today. Well, be nice to them every day.
Yeah, I mean...
Be extra nice to them today. All right, cybersecurity... I don't know why I'm having trouble with that word today. Cybersecurity researchers from Zscaler have discovered 117 vulnerabilities in Microsoft 365 that were introduced with the addition of SketchUp into the cloud productivity suite. Microsoft 365 is an online office suite. So you do... It's like Google... Docs or iCloud.
Which has been up there for a long time, right. and doesn't have issues.
SketchUp, the 3D modeling thing that Google used to own?
Exactly. To make matters worse, they claim to have managed to bypass the patches Microsoft released to address these flaws. SketchUp allows users to add 3D models to Microsoft documents because, you know, when you print them out, they won't be 3D anymore. And was first introduced in August of 2000. Last year, it was integrated into Microsoft's 365's Office 3D component. Researchers discovered that Microsoft used multiple SketchUp C APIs to allow the programs to parse an SKP file. That led them first to the discovery of 20 flaws and then to another 97 flaws. Most are heap buffer overflow out of bound write or stack buffer overflow vulnerabilities. Microsoft placed all of them under a remote code execution umbrella and grouped them into three CVEs. All three are labeled high severity, with a severity score of 7.8 out of 10. Zscaler's senior principal security researcher Kai Lu said the company found no evidence of the flaws being exploited in the wild. He added that could change at any time. Microsoft disabled support for SketchUp because the researchers managed to work around the patches it published. Microsoft also said that its customers had been protected since June. I don't know what that means since they got around the... Never mind. The point is...
Don't go there.
Don't go there. So our poll of the week, it's soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is MS-365 has 117 vulnerabilities. Your choices are, I'll stop using it immediately. I'll stop using it soon. I'll never stop using it. Never! MS what now? And work insists on it, but I sneer while using it. So far, we have 96 votes, 92 of which are MS what now? Excuse me, 97 votes. For some of you, work definitely insists on it, and there's nothing you can do about that. You're just going to use it. Just don't use the 3D SketchUp part, I suppose. And, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
With so many companies pushing into AR and VR, a lot of work is being done in 3D modeling now.
Augmented reality and virtual reality.
Right. And with Apple's Vision Pro coming out
next year, depends.
The Oculus, the two or three systems that are already out now, Microsoft HoloLens, being able to make 3D objects is going to be a big deal.
Right.
The joke now is right now the only real world application for VR is you can go to the IKEA website and get a model of one of their things.
Right.
And see how it looks in your living room.
So through your phone.
Through your phone, yep.
Yeah.
So you can see if that credenza is going to look okay over by the window or not.
Right.
You know, one thing that's become almost numbing is that before, folks used to call in and say, well, you're unfairly picking on Microsoft. But it's like now, you know, they mess something up and it's like, oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, and 100 vulnerabilities is an average patch Tuesday.
It's true.
For Microsoft.
We have gotten so numb to them constantly having to fix this or patch this or do this. It's like, yeah, just add it to the list.
Let's contrast that, at least in my case, with Linux. When I hear about a vulnerability, I generally wait at most 24 hours. And a patch is out, one vulnerability.
And usually the person that finds the vulnerability writes the patch for it.
and essentially says, I found this vulnerability, and I've already submitted the patch.
Yep.
So now it just depends on who your distribution company is to how quickly they get that patch out.
There is a growing problem in the open source community where bad guys are figuring out how to maliciously seed open source projects with malware by saying it's a higher version number. So here's, you know, this library X that everybody uses. Well, here's version 3. And so all the open source builds all around the world download version 3 because it's newer and it's got malware in it.
Right.
Because there's when the open source repositories were developed, nobody wrote anything with security built in.
Right.
Anyone could submit a project and the code just ends up going live.
Right.
So now places like GitHub and GitLabs are going to have to completely revamp how they accept projects.
And they're already working on
it. And some of the bigger projects have shut down submissions until they can get the problem under control.
Right. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Bill from Greece, New York. Hiya, Bill. What's up?
Hi, guys. I just want to report that you guys had another success.
Thank you. Two this year.
Yeah.
Last week I called in with a problem with Linux, and I think it may have been John said it sounded like a video card driver issue.
Yep.
So I put in a new video card. That was a trick. Now I don't have the issue. I can install any of the Linux I want.
Excellent. Well done, you.
Yeah.
Well done, you guys. You guys gave me the right answer, as you always do.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have to tell you, FXCE is my favorite desktop, but I understand needing to use some others. There's a new Dragon Linux. Is that what it's called?
I like to use Garuda Dragonized.
Dragonized. That's the name.
And Dave might like this because when you do pictures and you hover your mouse on a picture, it gives you a bigger thumbnail, and it also pops off all the XF data about the picture. All the camera data pops up too, just by hovering the mouse over the thumbnail.
Nice.
I'll have to give it a look. That's the beauty of that I love about Linux. You know, for me, on my because I'm running it on a 400 right now, and all I got to do is pop out the micro SD card, pop in another one, and load another system, and I can have, you know, I've got literally 4 or 5 that I play around with, but I'll have to give this one a shot. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, I was reading about that this morning, and I'm thinking, well, I've got a laptop that I could put that on and see what it's like.
So what does it mean to dragonize Linux?
It's the look and feel, I think.
Shooting out of it?
Yeah, hopefully not out of the...
Yeah. Is it a good Eastern dragon or a bad Western dragon?
That's a very good question.
Yeah, see, that's where I've got, I think, four or five different SD cards right now. that I've got different operating system loaded on that I can, you know, update or play around with. If I want to do it for this one because I was trying to help somebody else out, or and I've loaded it on to a couple SD cards for folks because they've come over and said, "Yeah, I'm having trouble. Come on over."
Yep.
Quick, put it in. Put it on my 400. They take it home. Yeah, it's working. And we just exchange SD cards.
Yep. That's like, easy enough to do.
Yeah, it's piece of cake.
Yeah, Garuda apparently has KDE Dragon Eyes. It also has GNOME. It also has Cinnamon, XFCE. Interesting. Sway. Oh, it even has Sway. Wow.
All of them.
A bunch of them. Yeah, holy cow. I'll be playing with that later today. Well, there's my weekend sorted. Thank you very much. Like I said, I just read about it today.
And it's already old news.
Yeah.
Have to post a link there, Steve.
In the Soundbites chat at soundbites.org/chat, Greaser1 says, hello from Los Lunas, New Mexico. New Mexico. It's 46 degrees and cloudy. Non-sticking snow yesterday. Huh.
Keep it down there.
Keep it. You're welcome to it. God bless you.
We've had a little of that here already.
Yeah, we have.
That was unbelievable. The idiots that came out on the road.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, the DMV has a moron day. They let all the morons out of their cages, give them keys to cars, and let them go, and spend the rest of the day rounding them up. Mostly they do that when it's snowing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I get ticked at is, all right, like I'm on 104.
Yeah.
Three-lane highway, right? I'm in the far right-hand lane doing 55, and I got somebody blaring the horn at me because I'm not going fast enough for them.
Yeah.
It's like, huh? Because they want to quick get up to that next exit, but they're too lazy to go around me where the lanes are clear, and that's where you can go faster.
And then they'll try to shoot past your three lanes to get to the exit ramp.
Okay, so I'm getting on the expressway today this morning to come here, and I can see there is a sign that says they're narrowing the lanes. There's cones everywhere. There's a truck with blinking lights. There's another truck just past it with a sign with an arrow. There's another one that says lane disappears. There's another one that says lane narrows. Every single person on the left waited till the absolute last second to move over.
Yeah, because they got to get that one car ahead.
Unbelievable.
Welcome to my world. I see it daily while we're driving around. That and running red lights.
So I'll let people in. They're nice. They got their signal on. Someone shoots up the shoulder to try to get in front of me. I won't let him in.
No, I won't let him in.
No, I'll crowd him out.
I let a guy in. He was right there, and he had his blinker on. He slowed down. I let him in. The guy behind me honked.
Yep.
So I waved with all my fingers.
Yeah.
And let the guy in front of me in. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
Don't be a jerk.
Well,
it's force. We're already going 7 miles an hour. It doesn't matter if you suddenly have to go 6 and you're 3 feet back.
Well, you added a second to his commute.
Yeah, I did. A second.
Have you seen what they have, though? There's construction going down 104. Between Portland and Goodman, because they're doing the bridge repair there. And then there's also over on 390, they're replacing some of the bridges there, so they're doing some work there. The highway department now has two new vehicles. And you go by them. One's a car, and the other looks like a utility van, you know, with the side panels, you know, the truck.
Sure.
With the... What you don't realize, because they got them... No markings. They're just white with the reflective tape on them. But they do have these racks on them. And you see these things flashing. Like, you know, warning lights or something like that?
Yeah.
Mm-mm. They're cameras.
Nice.
And they're catching people going through the work zone exceeding the speed limit. And you get a ticket in the mail.
My favorite part was once we got through the construction... People were peeling off to the left and flooring it.
Yep.
And as I was driving along, there's a cop pull this one over. There's a cop pull that one over. There's a cop pull this other one over. Okay. Well,
I sometimes joke when I'm driving, there's a speed limit, but there's no acceleration limit.
Yeah.
I can accelerate at 10 Gs until I hit 55.
And I do fully understand that those numbers on the big white signs on the side of the road are purely a suggestion.
Yeah.
But there comes a limit. You can't do 90.
Well, the problem is it's hard to do 490. My car won't get up that high.
I'm trying, officer. It says 490.
No, Tuesday, I was over on the inner part of the city, and a school bus had stopped, and we're behind him. But this other car decided to go along the right-hand side, try to quick beat him before he put the signs out because the flashes were coming on. I stopped, and so did the car in front of me. But this other guy came right along the roadside, tried to get by him. He gets by. All of a sudden, this cop car comes out from the side road.
I always wonder about that. There's a whole bunch of people speeding, and the cop turns his lights on. Only the ones that feel guilty are going to pull over.
Right.
Was a story I read? Some cop pulls over a guy who's just driving ridiculously fast down the road, and the police officer walks up to the door. Says, "You know why I pulled you over?" And the guy said, "Well, yeah, my wife got arrested last week, and I thought you were bringing her back."
I have a friend who's a police officer. He says, when I turn my lights on, I just look for where the brake lights come on.
Yep.
Good one.
Those are the guilty people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, your wife fell out of the car 2 miles ago. Oh, thank God. I thought I went deaf.
Yeah, I know these jokes.
Thought of being Treadmill. He's not to get an 11.
To get back to some sort of computer-like thing.
So when all the cars, computers can talk to each other and say, I'm going to go this way, I'm going to go that way, I'm going to merge, then the speeds can go up. When we have completely automated working self-driving cars.
Right, actual working self-driving cars. The problem, two problems. First, people aren't going to be satisfied with that. Well, they don't want a car that self-drives. They want a car that drives like they drive.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Go
so
faster.
So they want to be first, they want to not let anybody in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that's not going to happen.
We need Robert Picardo and Johnny Cab.
Well, like on mine, I got a Ford Escape. And right now, if I set the speed control, say, for 60.
Right.
And we're going along, and somebody pulls out in front of me, you know, goes around the left-hand side, comes around, pulls in front of me, and they're going a little bit slower. Because I have it set on cruise control, my car automatically knows to slow down to keep that safe distance
radar
in between.
Cruise.
Yep.
My wife gets scared when I test that feature on her Toyota. So I wanted to see if it would stop in the car. I have noticed it's a lot more aggressive than I am and much more aggressive than she is on how close it gets to the car in front of me.
Oh, yeah.
And then when that car starts up again, my car will start up and follow right behind them again. But it gets awful. And there's three settings on the dashboard for how close it will let you go.
How many car
And even
car
if you
lights.
Have the farthest away, it's still I can feel her tensing. You're going to slow down? No, the car will.
Eventually.
My foot's on the near the brake. You know,
The Chevy, well, several people have it. They have something I think is called Super Cruise, I think. And it includes all that stuff, front radar, back radar, side radar. But also, they've mapped out a whole bunch of roads.
Yeah.
So you can quite literally let go of the wheel, and it will follow the road for you. It's not self-driving in the sense that there's also a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And if you close your eyes or turn your head or fall asleep or something, it stops.
Yeah.
It just stops. So you have to be paying attention and ready to grab the wheel. But it will do this. And both 490 and 390 have been mapped. And someday I'm just going to rent a car and try it.
Yeah, our Toyota, you have to be gripping the steering wheel hard enough. Not just gripping the wheel, hard enough for the sensor to know it. Or it turns off the self-lane guidance stuff.
Right.
Well, I've always thought that's the stupidest thing.
Yes,
If I'm falling asleep or not paying attention, you should keep that stuff on.
Right.
Radar cruise, the lane adjustment.
Right. I believe what Super Cruise does is stop the car.
Yeah.
I don't know if it pulls it over, but it stops the car. So, there's they're getting closer to self-driving cars, but the two things you have to realize. First, computer programs are written by humans.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be a problem.
That's why all those captures say point out crosswalks and bicycles and buses. And
yep.
We're training them.
Are critters crossing the street?
Yep. So you've got to be very careful about that. And
eventually,
the second thing is it's never going to drive like you drive. I don't care who you are.
Eventually it's going to be like Will Smith in iRobot where he gets yelled at for manually driving.
Right, right, right.
Well, it's not my fault the robots are out to kill me.
Look, I absolutely get this idea. You know, kids got to go to practice. One's got to go here. One's got to go there. One's got to go the other one. Three self-driving cars. Take the kid to practice. Yep. Come on back. Done. I get that. But the point is, first, be a better parent. Go with them. Secondly, it's just not going to – It's we're not there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're simply not there yet, and I don't know that we'll ever really be there.
They've been saying another 10 years for like 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Part of the problem is unless every car is self-driving, mm-hmm. you're going to find that one idiot on the road
–
And is that person is going to cause a problem.
I said that years ago when anti-lock brakes were starting to get popular. It was in the high-end cars first. And so it's great if you have anti-lock brakes, but if the guy behind you doesn't, he's going to hit you.
Right.
But now that's kind of a standard feature across most cars.
Yeah. Mine even has the feature that, like, if I'm going down a dark highway, it automatically turns the high beams on.
And if a car comes at you, it turns them off.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
I'm waiting for the forward-looking infrared heads-up windshield display.
Oh,
some of the high-end cars have that now. There was a, was it Cadillac? Somebody had a commercial where they showed a deer off the side of the road that you could not see because it was dark.
Right.
But the IR camera saw it, and a little warning light popped up and highlighted the deer on the windshield.
Oh, yeah. Heads-up displays are the best.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Heads-up displays are the best.
But I wonder if they'll say that's distracted driving.
Well, the theory is it's enhanced driving.
Because you still look straight ahead out the windshield, but you can see your gauges.
Right.
And you can see warning lights.
Right. Hmm.
Like I say, the technology has come so far just in the years that we've been on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it, folks. When we first started this show, you know, 33 years ago, computers, you know, took up your whole desk. They had 2 5-and-a-quarter floppies, monochrome screen, and very limited memory.
And the way you fixed problems was that big red switch on the side.
Yeah. Yep. To where now you can have, matter of fact, most of the average phones are more powerful than the first computers that came out that were desktops.
This watch is more powerful than the computers that took us to the moon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we don't go to anymore, which makes me angry.
Well, we're trying again. Artemis 2 is the Orion capsule just got the Super Guppy delivered the Orion capsule.
Right. True.
And somebody posted a picture of the Super Guppy landing. It's the weirdest looking plane.
Yeah.
And some guy said, wait, that's a real plane? It looks too stupid to be a real plane.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at the Oshkosh Air Venture Show last summer, they had both the Dreamlifter, which is a 787 with big bulges out the side for carrying airplanes, and the Super Guppy sitting next to each other.
Right.
Crazy-looking planes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. And we will be right back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
It's the crazy weather changes.
That's part of it. Certainly part of it. J.M. Roch says in our chat, says, you know the techniques that we use to confuse robo-taxis? In California, they put road cones on the hoods, brought the whole fleet to a standstill. I've seen that. Because they're designed to avoid road cones.
Yep.
if the road cone is right in front of the camera, they're not going to move.
Do you see the pictures of the little delivery robots that got stuck on a closed sidewalk? And there are just 20, 30 of them lined up because they don't know how to get around the closed sidewalk.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of work left to do. When Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, suffered a dizzy spell on Wednesday, he took a precautionary trip to the hospital and learned that he had suffered a minor stroke. A day later, he said in an interview, the hospital released him and he was doing good. The health scare came during a trip to Mexico City where Mr. Wozniak, 73, was slated to speak at a conference called the World Business Forum. The dizzy spell hit him as he was typing at his computer, he said. The hospital did an MRI, he added, and determined that he had a small capillary leak as well as symptoms of vertigo. Mr. Wozniak flew home to Los Gatos, California on Thursday and was waiting for dinner to be served when he talked with the New York Times about this. I'm back home and feeling good, he said. The worst part of the experience, he said, was that the hospital required him to stay on a gurney for 24 hours and wouldn't let him roll onto his side. Oh, my Lord. That's me. I do not sleep on my back. And when I went in for my torn quadricep, they had me lying on my back for 24 hours.
Oh, no.
I couldn't sleep.
I'm dead tired, wide awake.
Yeah, exactly. The health scare, he said, added, means that he will have to cancel a number of trips for speaking engagements in Dubai. Medellin, Colombia, and Baku, Azerbaijan. That's life for me in the busy times, Mr. Wozniak said of the travel. Known as Woz, Mr. Wozniak built the first Apple computer in 1976. The business he and Steve Jobs built helped popularize the personal computer and became one of the world's most influential technology companies. Mr. Wozniak left Apple in the 1980s, but has remained close to the company and regularly attends its high-profile events. His legend at Apple helped him build a huge fan base among tech enthusiasts, and the fact that he's just the nicest human being on the planet. And his celebrity broadened beyond tech in 2009 after he became a contestant in the popular show Dancing with the Stars, where I believe he did the worm.
Yep, images are seared into my retinas.
Well, you know, there's nothing really to say about this. I'm not going to make a joke. We wish Mr. Wozniak well. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 800-790-0415.
And he credits watching Star Trek and going to conventions when he was a teenager to hit his interest in computers and the future and creating the Apple.
Well, the whole thing behind the first flip phones.
Yeah.
The people who invented it said, to come from Star Trek.
Yeah, we want to be Captain Kirk.
Yep.
Well, it's just like back in the day, the 80s and that, I can remember, you know, we used to go down to Atlanta for the computer show down there. And I got to meet Dennis Hayes.
Oh, yeah.
He was a real down-to-earth person.
Yeah, nice. Did you go screech, boing, boing, boing to him?
Yeah. No, the real
You could only talk to him if you prefaced it by saying A-T.
Yeah.
One guy I was surprised.
Boy, that's a deep cut. You have to be a serious geek to get that one. Go ahead, sorry.
No. We were at dinner with some friends and that. And all of a sudden, Peter Norton goes, you guys here for the convention, right? Yeah. Mind if I sit with you? No. It was said we were there for close to 2.5 hours.
Does he fold his arms the whole time? that logo, for 40 years, he had his arms folded.
He did that on stage.
Yeah?
He came out, and he had a suit coat on. He goes, no, hold on, folks. You got to know Peter Norton, folks, if you've ever seen a picture of this guy. He's a thin guy, looks like a professor. But he came out on stage, he had a suit coat on, you know, his white shirt and tie. He goes, now, this isn't right. So he takes off the suit coat, puts it on the back of the chair, rolls up his sleeves.
Yep.
Folds his arms in the front of him. He goes, all right, let's get started, folks. And boom, off he went. And we asked him a few questions, but he met us later that night when we were having dinner. And he goes, you mind if we sit? No, come on. And he went through the whole scenario, how him and a couple other guys developed the software in their the garage.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, because they set up everything out there. Because
Norton Utilities was the program that everyone used to fix their damaged hard drives.
Yeah.
Which made me think, why does the hard drive get damaged in the first place? Let's work on that.
Yeah. let's hit the cause, not the symptom.
You know, he actually trademarked that pink shirt folded arms look that was on the cover of the magazine in 19, 1985, The Pink Shirt Book.
Oh, really?
The Programmer's Guide to the IBM PC.
Yep. Yep. Well, and those were the days when you could put all the information there was in a book.
Yep.
Nowadays, you can't fit it all on the internet at this point. It's
He had some really good utilities, too, for fixing different things.
Great utilities. You know. And then he sold it to what's-it-call-it, and they just started throwing everything into it, and it just wasn't.
Ghost was what I used a lot.
There was a while there where the people at Symantec stole Steve Gibson's SpinRite and moved it into Norton Utilities. Steve had to sue him for it.
Nice.
Oh, really?
Because SpinRite is, the ultimate mass storage hard drive and maintenance utility.
Yeah.
So you run SpinRite, then you don't need Norton.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. SpinRite is an amazing program.
There were stories Steve has told about Compaq had a site license, and every hard drive that came into the Compaq loading dock, thousands of them a day, had SpinRite run on them, and 30% were sent back as defective.
Yep.
Hard drive manufacturers kept calling Steve saying, please stop doing that. So how many drives are defective before they leave the factory, and then another 30% are defective when they make it to the customer?
Yep. Well, as time goes on, we find that quality control is going by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Cheaper components, and it's happening to everybody. Everybody from Apple down to
they'll play the percentages.
Yeah.
And the really annoying part is that say Apple wants this quality, something doesn't make it. Well, then the knockoff company down the road will take it just fine, and it hits the market, and people think it's just as good as Apple. There was iFixit, one of the big companies, tore down Apple's Thunderbolt 4 cable, which is $130, and found there's a double sided circuit board with hundreds of components on it, and then they take a cheap $3 Amazon cable, and it's just a couple of wires.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's why your data gets corrupted when it's being passed back and forth over those just a couple of wires. There's no circuitry maintaining the integrity of the data.
That's exactly right.
Sometimes cheap is too cheap.
Well, again, it goes back to the old adage. You get what you pay for.
That's right. And you pay for what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you buy cheap, you're going to get cheap. Just the way it is.
And look, for some things, that's fine. And for some people, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I tend to buy refurbished computers. I know what I'm doing.
Yep.
And I can handle it when there's an issue.
Except for taking off the cover.
Except for taking off the cover. If it's software, I can handle it. But I don't recommend that to anybody else. If you're going to buy a computer, buy something new with a full warranty and get somebody else to look. I just call Dave. That's the easy way to do it.
You ever want to see him sweat, folks?
I don't do hardware. I don't do hardware. I'll do software all day long, all week long. Sometimes that's what it takes. But I don't do hardware. I buy a lot of stuff off of Woot. It's refurbished and it's inexpensive and it all works. And I don't have a problem with that. You get a 90-day warranty or whatever, and if it runs for 90 days, it'll probably run for 10 years.
A lot of people ask me if buying refurbished is worth it. And it's a complicated answer, because if you know how to fix when the problem comes up, it is worth it.
Yeah.
Why is it refurbished? Was it somebody bought it, didn't like it, returned it? Okay, that's probably fine. Did somebody buy it, have so many problems with it, they couldn't stand it anymore, and then return it?
Right.
Even though it gets refurbished and components are fixed, that thing had something wrong with it. So
yeah, and I mean, sometimes you can get a computer and they say it's refurbished, and they bring it in. And all they basically do is test it out and make sure it's all running. So if that person had set, say, the Windows already up,
right,
and the company didn't bother to do a reset because you're buying a refurbished machine, they're just worried about reselling it, you bear the responsibility to reinstall the software and get it back up and running.
Well, and that's the other thing.
You gotta
be comfortable with it. I put Linux on everything. So if somebody's put a bad version of Windows on it, or it's corrupted, or it's got malware on it, I don't care. Yeah. It's going to be reformatted. I'm done.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter to me. So, the circumstances are very different between me and you. And that's, just the way it is. So,
but too many people see, oh, it's $200 cheaper, I'll buy it.
Yep.
And then if you luck out and nothing's wrong with it, great. But if you start having problems with it, that $200 wasn't really a wise investment.
Right. I remember at one time when I was still at the computer center, I had a guy who came in every day asking all kinds of questions. Finally, he came in, he started asking questions. He said, sounds like you bought a computer. He said, yeah, I did. I said, well, did you buy it for me? He said, no, I bought it down the road because it was $5 cheaper. I said, well, then you have to go ask them questions. He said, but they don't know anything. And I said, and that clearly was not worth $5 to you.
Yeah.
So go ask them. He said, well, how do I get you to answer my computer questions? I said, return the computer you bought from them and buy it from me for $5 more.
Yeah.
That's all.
I was talking to Dave before the show. We had a customer a little while ago that was mad that he couldn't figure out how to get something to work, and he wanted us to give him the name of some of our other customers so he could call them and have them come over and get it to work.
Nice.
Well, we offer a service that if you can't figure it out, we do it. That's our business model.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I don't want to pay you. Well, okay.
Then don't. That's fine, too.
And we're not going to give you our customers' names.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Not that sorry.
We can't give out their names. That's privacy.
That's right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Good afternoon. You were talking about buying refurbed or, you know, stuff like that. Certain things you really should buy refurbed, like TVs and computer monitors.
Right.
You know, well, not refurbed, but used, because they have planned obsolescence.
Well, even if it's not planned obsolescence, and there's interesting bills moving through Congress now to outlaw planned obsolescence.
Right.
Things, electrical components have a certain life. How hot they are, heating and cooling cycles, this chip is only going to last 5 years.
Right.
And nothing you can do about
it.
Because people want cheap. And so if you want, you know, we joke, my parents got a television the same year they got me, and it lasted 18 years. That won't happen anymore. I helped the garbage man throw it in the back of the truck, and he was just so excited.
He got giant, another 18 years out.
Giant CRT.
Right.
He pulled that lever to make the garbage truck squish it, and when that CRT imploded, it just vibrated and echoed all in the garbage. He had the biggest grin on his face. But yeah, people want cheap, and cheap means lower quality.
When my father-in-law passed, we got his big screen TV.
Mm-hmm.
I would not have bought that television from anybody. It was older and used.
Probably started getting pixel burn in.
Exactly right. But for free and for the while that it lasted, perfectly fine with me.
Yep.
But I would not have paid penny one for that. You're absolutely right.
Right. I mean, I remember my dad having a Zenith TV that lasted 30 years.
Yep.
We threw it away because we didn't want a console anymore.
Right, right.
Remember when TVs
because
were furniture?
Consoles weren't in anymore.
Remember when they used to replace the guts of a console with a bar?
Yeah.
And you'd open up the top and there would be a bar inside instead of...
The cat's so mad they can't sleep on top of the monitor anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I can remember, though...
The consoles into fish tanks.
Yeah. Yes.
I can remember going down to Key Drugs because we had to take the tubes out of the TV.
Why did the drugstore have the tube tester?
And they had the tube tester.
Wouldn't it be the hardware
store? You had to go down there, put it in the tube tester to see if it was any good. And then, I need this one replaced. You get the replacement, go home, plug it in, and, now we can watch TV for Sunday afternoon.
Yep. I remember those at Radio Shack, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, that was my favorite part of going out with my dad on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Take a few tubes and test them.
Supposedly, Radio Shack is making a comeback.
That's what they say.
Some cities.
Hmm. That's what they say. We'll see.
Well, the maker movement is growing, so... People need what Radio Shack used to be. That's what we went to Radio Shack and Goldcrest Electronics.
Oh,
and you buy all the cool little things and build stuff.
Yeah, he just sold out a few years ago. Now it's he went over
and
the
retired.
Corner of
he?
Culver and Goodman. Yeah, he sold the business and now it's a sub shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I hate going to Amazon to buy things that I used to get at Radio Shack.
Yeah.
Because 9 out of 10 times I'd run into something and go, I'll just go there and get it right away and fix the problem.
Yeah, there's no more good electronic stores around.
They turned into a cell phone store like a lot of other electronic shops.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't. It's, so the components were this one little thing in the back.
Right.
If you want interesting stories, go to YouTube. There's a guy called The Company Man who talks about the rise and fall of so many companies, and Radio Shack's one of them. It's a great channel.
Oh, I'll check it out. Thank you.
Yeah, he's called The Company Man. But anyways, never, ever buy a floor-model TV that's been on the sales floor.
Right.
Yeah, because it's already lost half its life.
You're going to get out of it unless you get a full warranty and everything else out of it.
Yep, yep, I agree. So, ask them about the warranty. When they tell you it's only 90 days or 30 days or 15 days.
Mm-hmm. It better be a really good deal, like really good.
Well, if they don't have faith in it, why should you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I get that.
Dirt cheap.
I remember that when we were doing custom PCs, we were buying enclosures with a 300-watt power supply for $15.
Yep.
And they had a 15-day warranty.
Yep.
But they were $15.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And that's what you need when you're making PCs on the cheap.
And the fact is, when you buy 100 of them, if something doesn't work out, you just swap a case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a little different than I bought one.
Yeah.
I get it. Thanks, Mark.
Okay. Have a good one.
You too.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a, we all look for the bargain, but sometimes the bargain is not a bargain.
Yeah. You get what you pay for.
Yep. Like I said, for some things, I don't mind buying refurbs. I don't mind buying what's basically used. But, you know, you got to be aware and you got to be careful. I bought an old, many, many years ago, my second car was a Chevy Bel Air. Great car. Great. Three on the tree. Great car. Had 150,000 miles on it. I put 150,000 miles on it. Sold it to a friend for $1. He put 150,000 miles on it. Finally, it died. We took the engine out to be the weight base for his telescope. But we then, you know, had them. I was there when we had a little ceremony when they towed away the car. The guy hooked up the car, started forward, and the frame broke in four places.
Whoa.
Sometime before I bought it, it had been in an accident. I was 20 when I bought that car. And the frame had been broken in four places and welded. And we put, 300,000 miles on it?
Yeah.
But, you know, now, if you brush the side of a car, it falls apart and you can't do a thing with it. But, you know, those were the days. That was a great car.
There was an episode of Top Gear in England where they got used cars, the cheapest used cars they could find, you know, like for £1,000, and had these different races with them. And they were all laughed at James, who got a Mercedes. It's a Mercedes because it had 800,000 kilometers on it.
Wow.
Okay, that was a taxi somewhere.
Yeah.
With that much mileage on it. And after the race, he sold it to a taxi company who turned it back into a taxi, put another 800,000 kilometers on it.
Yep. I always wanted the what do they call it? The taxi that were checker cabs. What did they call those? I forget what they call the car, the actual car. But I had a friend, when I lived in New York, I had a friend who worked at a garage, a taxi garage. And he said, yeah, at about 150,000 miles, we start thinking about changing the oil. Okay. That's a car I could drive.
Yeah.
I mean, the vans that we drive right now, they average, I mean, they get about 300 and maybe 5,000 miles on them. And then the company will turn around and sell them. And we still have a number of them that after we've put, you know, over 300,000 miles on it, these vans are still going like crazy.
Well, but
because they're doing maintenance every six weeks, you know, and oil changes and all that.
That's just it. It's the maintenance.
The maintenance, you folks, you know, I mean, granted, it can have all these computers on there to tell you to do this or do that. But just simple routine maintenance, you know, doing like the oil changes and everything else and, you know, keeping up with that and the lubes and all that. It just pays in the long run.
Yep. Yep.
But a lot of folks say, no, I can go another few thousand miles. And then they forget. And all of a sudden, instead of doing it at 3,000, all of a sudden it's 6,000.
Yeah.
And that oil's starting to look like tar.
Yep.
Well, I have to admit that Chevy Bel Air that we drove for 300,000 miles, both I and the fellow I sold it to were not high maintenance people. We were in our 20s. What did we know? You know, you're going to drive it and then you're done. And
see, that's one thing my dad always taught me.
They lasted, though.
Because I had a 57 Ford, also three on the tree. And he goes, as long as you sit there and, you know, do the oil changes and everything else, he goes, that thing will run solid. Yeah.
Well, things have changed, too. My son's a mechanic. And when I was a kid, it was you change your oil every 3,000 miles or else the car's going to blow up.
Oh, yeah.
That's mostly now about 5,000 miles because the cars are better, the oil's better.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a car that uses synthetic oil, which is more expensive.
6,000 miles.
But that's up to 10,000.
Oh, really? 10?
Zero W20.
Wow.
And, so up to 10,000 miles between oil changes. So they're trying to make the cars as maintenance-free as they can.
Yeah.
Because they know people don't do it.
I have to say, not the people who live next door to me now, but the people before that. The guy came over and knocked on my door one day and said, can you drive stick? I said, yeah, why? He said, well, my son left his car in our driveway and it's blocking us. And it's a stick and I can't drive it. So, of course, I put on my cape and flew over and moved the car. And it wasn't until afterwards I realized that he simply assumed I knew how to drive stick because I'm old.
Yeah.
I
haven't in decades, but
I know how.
I used to be able to.
Yeah. I can remember a number of times when I was in my 30s, folks would ask me, you know, are you busy this weekend? Why? Well, we're moving and we need somebody to drive the truck and it's stick. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Because back then,
I remember the driving
Hertz, the U-Haul trucks were stick shift.
And your driving test, you had to park on a hill,
yep,
and then go again after parking on the hill with a stick.
Yep,
that took me a little bit of time.
My father, this is how old I am. My father took his driving test in a Model T Ford, parked on the hill, couldn't get it started, so he just took off the brake. Glided down the hill, popped in the clutch, off he went. Off he went.
There was Top Gear episode there where they were playing with a Model T because it's the first car that became what is still a car.
Yep.
Steering wheel, gas pedal, brake pedal, clutch pedal. Extremely complicated to start up and run. So they went to a hotel one night and just parked out front. The valet came out, didn't know how to start it up. So when the guys came out in the morning, car's right out front for them. Yeah, we learned how to do that. If the valet doesn't know how to move your car, it'll stay right there.
All right, that music tells us you've wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away. There's a whole lot more of this nonsense coming your way. A whole lot more Dave Enright, way too much Steve Ray, and not nearly enough Nick Francesco. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. And we'll talk about anything you want to talk about, but maybe we'll even talk about computers. You never know. But come back. We'll be here. You're listening to Soundbites, the longest running computer show in the known universe, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, because it is only with your support that we remain member supported. Jazz 90.1. Take that quick bio break, but don't go too far. Come on back. We'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 50 years on the air in Rochester.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Venner.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites. Right here.
Still?
On member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Lost track.
Unbelievable. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. While I read this news item,
I was going to say the ever vigilant Rob Linton has posted the Jazz Cruise tickets are going to be starting on sale December 1st. So we're already looking forward to next summer.
That is the best. Spending the day on the canal, listening to good music, chatting with good people. It's a great thing. All right, so maybe the new titanium iPhone isn't as solid as it seems. Apple recently released a critical update for iPhone 15s following reports of bugs linked to virtual payments and car-related issues. Specifically, several BMW owners said near-field communication, or NFC features, like Apple Pay, broke when their iPhone 15, iPhone 15 Plus, iPhone 15 Pro, and iPhone 15 Max were wirelessly charged on their vehicle. Virtual keys for BMW, which acknowledged the problem last month, also failed. Other reports say Toyota Supra owners were affected as well. Apple's solution is update 17.1.1, which provides bug fixes, quote, end quote, to problems with wireless charging in certain cars and a weather icon lock screen glitch. Installing the fix is simple enough. Users can just go to their settings and find the software update tab while their phone is connected to a power source and Wi-Fi. Automatic updates can be turned on as well. Bug fixes for Apple products have become so crucial that the company is holding off on developing new software updates for next year to fix code glitches on current devices. Apple's solution is, I just read that one. Boy, oh boy.
Either not enough coffee or too much coffee.
Exactly. The titanium iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max have also come under fire for uncomfortably overheating during usage. In an Apple forum, one customer said their device was, and I quote, too hot to hold. Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo warned this phenomenon is likely connected to design compromises to reduce the phone's weight. Apple blames software and app-related bugs for the problem, not its titanium frame. How's your iPhone 15? Give us a call if you can. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415.
See, that goes back to the same old problem that other companies are experiencing, too. They try to get it thinner, so it's lighter weight. And people put freaking cases on the things and make them heavier anyways to protect them.
So put an OtterBox on, it's what, another 15 pounds?
Yeah. When this story first broke, we were wondering why BMW and Toyota. So right. Obviously it was some chip that they both bought.
Right.
But you wouldn't think BMW and Toyota, maybe BMW and Acura, but turns out the Toyota Supra is a BMW Z4 underneath.
Right.
And that's why they were both affected.
Z4 here in America.
I was using the European pronunciation because it's a European car.
But it comes right back to, as you said, everybody, the mania, and we blame Apple for this, is for thinner and lighter. And I get that. I get that. The problem is, at some point, physics always wins.
Yeah.
And when near field is already supposed to be an inch, and you put a case on it, now it's half an inch.
Right.
For the radio signal to get through.
Well, it's 1.6 centimeters, right? So that's about an inch and a quarter, a little more, maybe. So, yeah, but yes. By the time you end up putting a case on it, you're pretty close to done.
Yeah, and again, folks, it's not the fall that does anything in. Not
right.
Hurting people. It's the sudden stopping with the ground.
That's right.
It's like
the joke of the guy who fell off a 50-story building past the 20th floor. Somebody yelled out, "How you doing?" And he yelled, "So far, so good."
I say, fall has never killed anybody.
Right.
It's a sudden stopping.
It's actually
ground.
Not true.
Yeah, I know. There was one guy that fell, parachute didn't open correctly, and wound up falling like in trees and bushes. He was pretty well messed up, broken bones, but still up and walking.
Well, on the other hand, you can die while falling from fright.
True. Yep. Shock.
So, yeah, if you're in shock. So, yeah. But
there's a case of a flight attendant that fell out of an airplane at 20,000 feet and survived.
And survived, just bounced, apparently. Yeah.
So Mythbusters had to test that one.
Yes. But, yeah, so one of the things you've got to – and the other thing is when you put a case on it, you're keeping the heat in more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why a lot of cases have holes on them.
And the other thing, too, is if they're going thinner and they're trying to add more features, that's more heat.
Exactly
that
right.
That heat has to go somewhere.
And you make the nanometer process, what is M3's?
Three nanometers now? Yeah.
That's heat's got nowhere to go,
they're
folks.
They're going down to angstroms. That nanometers are too big now.
They're too big now. But the heat has nowhere to go. If you don't have a fan on the thing, that heat is just going to sit there. And that's just the way it is.
It's not pumping liquid nitrogen at it either.
That's exactly right. And it's physics. You can't beat it.
But it sounds bad, though. We're going from 3 nanometers to 30 angstroms.
Yeah.
That sounds bad.
But there was a company that put out a third pounder to beat the quarter pounder.
Yep.
And nobody bought it because Americans are so friggin' stupid, they thought a third of a pound was less than a quarter of a pound.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
Arties,
was it?
No, that is on the Discovery Channel.
Foods
that make America great. And they went through the whole thing about the difference between Burger King, McDonald's, Kentucky Fried Chicken. And they went through all these fast food places and tried to help. One of the biggest things that came up was the Kentucky Fried Chicken, which really helped them. Their sales in it was the drive-thru.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Because they go to one station, take their order. They go up to the next station, pay. And then you go up to the next station and pick up their product. They found by doing that, it gave other employees inside more time to get the orders together that the traffic wasn't backing up.
Yep.
And
one of the things that makes me insane is insaner, thank you very much, is I pay by phone in a lot of places. And when you're at a drive-thru, they hold the thing out to you, and it's never steady.
Yeah.
They're moving around like it's a game, like I'm supposed to hit the thing. Hold it still!
Or it's stuck to the wall, and they want you to hand you their phone.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
I know. I'll often use my watch, and at least that can go in the window.
Right, if
I'm parked close enough, it can go.
Right. And that's the other thing. Now you got to park closer. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Doug from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
I've got a good one for you here.
Okay.
I'm running Ubuntu, the latest, whatever it is. And one of my backup methods involves sending one big folder up to Google Drive, which used to take about 20 minutes, maybe. But recently it began stopping on a file number in the 600 range. I've got 1,061 files as of today, 7.7 gigabytes. So that number goes up and down as I remove a file or two or add a file or two.
Sure.
So now it just sits there for a half an hour on that one file for no reason I can figure. I've gone through all the folders within this subfolder, which is one that I created on the desktop where I put all my work. I don't use the default folders in Ubuntu. I've gone through all of them, sorted them by size to see if there's something big in there that would take that long, and I've got a 500 megabit connection with a green light. So it's not the speed. It's a wired connection. Why would it get stuck on one file?
Is it a zip file, do you know, by any chance?
There are no zip files
okay.
in my folders.
What kind of file it is?
I don't. I can't figure out what it is. When it began, it was file number 673 as I watched the progress indicator. Then it went to 681. Then I removed a couple of old documents. And, you know, it just varies in that high 600 range.
Right.
Would the log show which file, the file name it stops on?
It should. Well, it should.
Now you got me because I don't know what logs to look at, where it lives, or how to do that yet.
Well, all the logs are in /var/log.
One of the things Google Drive does is scan for malicious files on upload. So if there's a zip file, it will pause while it looks inside that zip file.
Similarly, PDFs, movie files, audio files.
So sometimes it's just an exceptionally large file that takes a long time. So we'll sometimes see that when you're downloading new email. It'll, download 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Number 4 had a big attachment.
So these aren't programs that you're backing up, are they?
No. All DocX.
Because it would scan inside Xyz.
MP3s, things like that.
There's also the fact that just the way computers work in general, and certainly the way they work in Google Drive, what happens is you upload to a buffer. When that buffer gets full, that buffer gets written to the hard drive. During that write, the upload pauses. And it may just be you've reached the limit of the buffer size for Google Drive.
But then after a while, does it actually continue and finish?
It does. It's just the whole thing's taking 90 minutes instead of what used to be about 20 minutes. So
I'm seeing a suggestion to clear the cache in the Google Drive app. Is this on Android or is this on a computer? It doesn't say.
No, it's on an Apple. It's an Apple laptop using Ubuntu. So if it's a cache, I'm not using an app. I do this through Firefox.
Right. So you could, I suppose, clear the cache in Firefox. But what it sounds like to me is you've just filled the buffer, and it now has to write that buffer before it can move on. So if you had less than the buffer size, say, what did you say it was, 7 gig?
Yeah.
Let's say you had 5 gig. It wouldn't buffer because maybe the buffer is 6 gig. I'm just making up numbers because I don't know what the buffer size is for Google.
Yeah.
But, let's say it's 6 gig. So you upload 5 gig, it all goes up into the buffer, and then you're done. And it writes in the background, that's the point of the buffer. And it writes in the background, you don't even know it, it doesn't matter to you, you're done.
And with 500 meg upload speed, it may be just sending too much for the other end to accept it that fast. Some router between you and Google is overwhelmed.
Gotcha. Right. So this has nothing
to do with Firefox,
per se, then?
No, it could be. No. Probably it's not. It's part of the World Wide Web. Not everybody has the latest and greatest machinery or gateways and everything else. And depending on the time of day, things can get jammed up. There's a variety of circumstances that could, attribute to the slowdowns.
One thing I might suggest is if you're conversant with this stuff, you might write yourself a crontab file, a crontab command that does it at 2 a.m. And then you don't care how long it takes.
Are there other browsers that you could try?
Sure.
That would let you know if it is a Firefox problem.
That's true. And, there's like 200 browsers that are available for Ubuntu. So you can easily use, anything from Chrome to Brave to Opera, whatever. But, one thing, this is what I do. I probably am having the same issue you're having, except I don't know it because I've set it up to happen at 2 a.m.
You don't care.
What was the name of the file you were suggesting?
What you do is you write what used to be called batch files under Windows. It's just a script. It's a command file. And you then, there's a thing called crontab, crontab, the cron table. And that's a thing that says, it basically is a thing that says at 4 a.m. do this, at 2 in the afternoon do that, once every hour do this, whatever that is, right? So for that, again, that once you get something like that set up, that's how I do all my backups because then I don't have to worry about it anymore. The computer does it all for me.
Okay. So what does it do? Record your mouse movements and everything else, like a macro?
No, you do this with commands. So you write a command that says delete this folder, and then another command that says copy this folder to this location.
Okay.
So it's all done at the command line. But again, once you've done it, you're done. And if it takes 2 hours, you don't care. You're fast asleep anyway.
Yeah, or I could just try doing it at 2 in the morning and see if the world is more asleep. And
That's true. But if it is a buffer issue, then it won't matter when you do it. But that's a good test. Absolutely a good test. Because if you're doing it at like 9 at night when every kid on the planet is downloading all the updates to their latest games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The nerve of those people, you know?
What are they thinking?
I'm serious. And people like General Motors want to use my internet? What the hell?
What the hell anyway?
Anyway. Well, thank you. That it's a good answer.
Thank you, Doug. We don't know if it's the right answer, but it's a good answer, and that's what counts.
Yep.
Interesting. So,
thanks.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. That's right. We give good answers here. Are they the right answers? Who knows? But they're good answers, and that's the important part. Some of them are even dang good answers. So, yeah, we're, you know, the world runs the way the world runs, and it works the same way on your computer. When you upload something, it goes into a buffer and then writes in the background. That's why you get your computer back as fast as you do in most cases. But when you're running, when you're updating a 7 gig file or folder, it may well be that you're overrunning the buffer, not overrunning it, you're filling the buffer. And so it has to empty the buffer before it can accept more data. And that sounds to me like what's happening there.
And if you do like a trace route from to the Google Drive address, it will show you how many routers it's going through to get there. And it could be any one of those routers along the way is overwhelmed or that needs to be replaced. That router is handling too many instructions.
Right.
There's also been a couple of issues lately with bigger denial of service attacks. I was just reading a story. Cloudflare got attacked at 201 million requests per second.
Yeah.
And somebody figured out a new way to do an attack. And so they can point it at a specific website, but all that traffic is traveling through routers along the internet from the bad guy to the target. Anyone in the middle there can get slowed down along the way too.
That's exactly right. Denial of service doesn't just hit one company. It hits a lot of them. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry? Larry?
Hello.
Hi, what's up?
Oh, my name is not Larry. I'm Scott, calling from Buffalo.
Pat from Buffalo.
Scott.
Yeah. Scott. Oh, it's Scott. Hi, Scott.
I'm sorry. Hey. I thought it was Larry.
No.
I'm sorry. I thought.
How are you, Scott?
Sorry.
I've been better. But in any case, I heard on the show some years ago, that many, that Yahoo was maybe dying, and you should try another company for your email. And one suggestion was mail.com, which I have lightly used for quite a while now. But a year ago, I started getting emails saying, we're changing something, and you got to upgrade whatever it is, the stuff you use to get in the mail.com. And so I reinstalled it. I went and changed the app, got a new app, and stuff like that. And then they said, I got an email saying, in a month, we're going to close down your account. This has been going on for a year. And every time I respond to their email, or whoever the email is, they want my name and my address and my password, and I don't want to give it to them. But that, now for a year, I'm getting more worried about it.
Sounds like it's a fake message.
That's what I think, yeah.
If you look at the from line, you might be able to, and not just the name it says, like if you right-click on it, it would give you the actual email address. It may not be coming from mail.com. There are a lot of fake messages like this flying around for all the different mail services. We had a customer come in the other day who got one from Spectrum, and she uses Spectrum. It wasn't really from Spectrum. It came from Korea. And she said a friend of hers in Florida got one saying her Spectrum account is going to be canceled. She doesn't even have Spectrum. Because the bad guys send out millions of messages to every possible address they can find, and they'll get someone who gives them their name and password. Now they can break into other places.
So, Scott, when you log in at mail.com to get your mail, from the web interface.
Actually, I use the app most of the time on my phone or my iPad.
All right. In any of that, do you get any message from mail.com saying there's a problem?
Not when I log in, but when I get in there, it's in my email.
Right. It's in your email, but it's not. Right. So if there were a real problem, you would get some sort of message that said you've got a problem.
I would say log into the webmail account just to see if a message pops up there, because then you're sure it's coming from them. The other thing we've started seeing is that a lot of companies, Yahoo and Google, have started moving from a password authentication to new OAuth authentication, which is more secure. But it does mean that older mail programs don't work. Google used to have a setting called less secure email.
Right.
And they turned that off last year, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so if you have an older OS with an older mail program, it may not work if it doesn't support OAuth. I'm trying to see if mail.com does that themselves.
My iPhone 14, I use it often for my mail.
So that would have OAuth built in.
Yeah. I don't know what OAuth is, but it sounds interesting. Yeah.
Open authentication.
It's a
more secure way to authenticate you to the mail server as a way to cut down on bad guys compromising mail servers.
Sounds like a spinoff from Frozen.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's OAuth. Right.
So, that's what I say.
So basically, I shouldn't really worry about this. I almost responded a few weeks ago, and I said, nope, before I put in my password. I didn't do it.
Yeah, to see who the message is really coming from. That's the first step, although that can be faked.
Yeah.
But oftentimes the bad guys don't bother faking that.
Right.
So it'll say, onedirection.uk. Well, that's not mail.com, so that's obviously fake.
It could come from mail.com.ru.
Yep.
Which is Russia.
Yeah.
Well, when I went one time, I was sent to Gmail. I said, what?
Yep.
If it's coming from Gmail, it's not real, because mail.com wouldn't use Gmail to answer, to do mail. They just they have their own system. The other thing you can do is I know mail.com uses two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
So if you've got that set up, it is less likely that somebody can break into your system, which is not the problem you're having here, but it's something you might also want to think about setting up.
That two thing might be very good. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
So, there's a huge problem with fake emails like that, claiming you need to change something in your system or we're going to shut your mail down. Part of it is, if your mail doesn't shut down, it was lying.
Right.
So in Scott's case, it said it's going to shut down his mail in a month, but it's been working for a year. So obviously that was lying.
Right.
It's one way to.
The thing to do is, when you get those kind of messages, your bank is telling you there's a problem, immediately go to your bank, whether you go live or you use their app or you do it online. However you want to do that, go to the bank.
Don't
if there's no message from them, it's fake.
Yep.
Just delete it.
And don't use the link in that message.
Right.
Go to your web browser and type your bank name, .com, or whatever your bank address is, to go there yourself.
Right.
I was looking at this message from our customer this week, and three of the links in the fake Spectrum message actually went to Spectrum.
Wow.
But the one that said click here to activate your account went to Korea.
Yeah.
So I clicked it to see what would happen, because sometimes it's already been discovered by the web hosting provider and the network providers and taken down. This one took me to Norway to a Spectrum login page.
Wow.
And so it was a pretty good fake.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and the people on the line. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. We'll be put on hold, but it's well worth it. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is Rob Linton. Join me tomorrow afternoon from 4 to 6 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I don't think so. Since when does he work Sundays?
Pre-recorded.
Oh, well.
Who was that? It was Rob
introducing that he's going to be on from 4 to 6. He doesn't work Sundays.
He doesn't work. Anyway, welcome back, everybody.
He directs. He's a station director.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Gary from Webster, New York on the line. What's up, Gary? Gary? You there, Gary?
Sorry.
Nope, we lost Gary. Sorry, Gary. Call back.
Hold on.
Dave's had a moment. Dave's having another moment. We'll see if Rob is actually listening.
Yeah.
I'll get a text message any minute now.
Yeah. Is your name Gary?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, we got somebody new coming on. As we've said several times, the radio station wasn't meant for calling.
Right.
So it's just the school district's telephone system.
Right.
And we have all these buttons that feed the telephone into the radio.
It was there before because there's like a little D that tells me he's been transferred. And then when we went to the phones, all of a sudden the D was gone. I didn't touch anything.
Yeah, it's your story. Stick to it. Is this Gary from Webster?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Hi, Gary. What's up?
I have a question. I'm currently running Windows 10, and I'm probably late to the game. I'm going to be switching to Windows 11. I just wondered if they've got a lot of the bugs out of it up to now.
How old is your machine?
It's probably 6-7 years old.
Don't do it.
Do you know what brand it is? Is it a name brand or is it a custom build?
It's an HP.
One of the things you can do is go to the HP support site and see if they have qualified that machine for Windows 11. Typically, though, with a machine that old, you would probably want to add more memory.
At least.
You probably have a spinning drive. You might want to replace that with a solid-state drive so everything runs faster. And at that point, you might want to get a new computer that would already come with Windows 11.
Right.
But if everything is working fine for you now and you're keeping up with the Windows 10 updates, because Windows 10 is currently still supported if you have the most recent version.
Yes, I think I do. I've been keeping up with the updates. And it's working pretty well. And I just wonder if I was taking a chance going to Windows 11 with this computer.
You'd be taking a pretty big chance.
You very well could be, because just like any other operating system, it demands more resources and power from your machine.
Yeah.
Because it's bigger, better, and faster. And, you know, six or seven-year-old computer, a little work. It's just like, you know, they say Windows, it should work on this. Yeah, but I also want to get my task done sometime today.
Yep.
Right. I have a laptop. It's just 2 years old. That shouldn't be a problem, I don't think. But probably not.
But again, go to the manufacturer's website. Make sure you get your drivers updated. Or at least have the drivers downloaded for the new OS.
When you download the drivers, put them on a thumb drive because they may be erased when you upgrade.
Sometime off your computer,
Mm-hmm.
And as always, have a backup before you do anything major. Have a backup all the time, period.
Right.
But before you do anything major, like upgrade the operating system, make sure you back up just in case something goes wrong.
And we're not talking about programs. The only thing you got to back up are documents and photos.
Yes.
Those programs would get reinstalled anyway. But, that's the nice thing about the name brand PCs is they'll typically have an upgrade guide for whatever the new OS is to see if it's rated or not, what drivers you may need or not. And we also like to joke that Microsoft's minimum requirements are really minimum. They'll run Windows and nothing else.
Right.
So usually you double the minimum requirements. So we like to say at least 8 gigs of RAM. Solid-state drive these days is almost as important for the speed of the processor and the speed of loading files. And so that's what we see most new computers are coming with these days.
Right.
One quick question, too. a lot of these websites require your email as your username when you try to log in. Does that make it more increased chance of other bogus websites getting your email?
Absolutely.
Yes. So a lot of people will make fake email addresses, well, not fake, but secondary email addresses for throwaway websites like that. You know, I just want to log in to this magazine to read a comment. Well, they don't need my real email address. Here, hide my email address. Some services, you know, Google, I think Microsoft does too, Apple, they have automatic email aliasing. Apple calls it hide my email, where they'll generate a random email address to give to this one company. And then if you start getting too much spam, you can disable that random address so you don't lose your main email address. It's really hard changing your main email address.
Yeah. And that's where we also suggest using a password manager.
So you've got a really good
because
long password
they can make it, you know,
break.
They can produce very, like Nick and I both use EnPass, and you can create some really complex email passwords that you don't have to remember. EnPass will remember them for you. You've only got to remember the one to get into the system and make it virtually impossible for anybody to, you know, get into your email or, you know, hack it.
The other thing is, look, Gmail is free. So what I recommend people do is get a second Gmail address. And that one, Gmail in particular, lets use plus addressing. So let's say you went to Fredco to look at something, and they want your email address, and you've got an email address of GaryTemp@gmail.com. You can tell them your address is GaryTemp+Fredco@gmail.com. Your email will come to Gary Temp without a problem, but it'll come to it as GaryTemp+Fredco. So you'll know if Fredco has sold your email. In addition, you can then say block email from Fredco that has Fredco in the address because it's spam.
I've posted a couple of links on how to set up alternate email addresses to do
Perfect.
That.
Okie doke.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Gary. Yeah, I recommend that everybody get at least one secondary email address. Also, if you need a recovery email address for your main email address, mm-hmm. having that second email address is essential, actually. I believe Google at least is in the process of deleting accounts that haven't been used in a few years. So if you've got an email address...
I think it's 1 year. I've been getting notices from a company that used to use Google email and doesn't anymore. You're saying, you got to log in now or we're going to delete your account. So I log in, keep it active for another year, just in case.
Mm-hmm. But Google is doing the same thing. They're deleting accounts that haven't been used in a long time.
And that's the other nice thing about it. You know, so even if you use that, say, other email address for just junk.
Right.
It also includes, folks, 15 gig of free storage.
Right.
With the Google Drive that you could store stuff up, you know, whether it be photos or additional documents, so you can put it in two different places off on the cloud.
Yep.
And not have to pay a penny.
And Google gives you a lot more space than Apple or Microsoft do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good deal. You get 5 gig from Microsoft and Apple, you get 15 gig from Google.
I had a customer this week.
Free.
Google Mail was full. She had 13 gigs used. And said, well, do you have to delete a bunch of email? Well, I've been trying to do that. Well, you got to delete all the pictures because those make up a lot. Oh, I don't want to do that. Or you pay the money and buy 100 gigs.
Right.
The next step up. Actually, Google's having a sale right now, 50 cents a month for 3 months.
Yeah. And it's what, $1 a year, $2 a year, something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
So,
$1.99 a month.
I meant a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. $2 a month.
That's still. For storage off on the cloud?
Right. It's $25 a year.
How can you go wrong?
For 100 gig. Come on. For Pete's sake. That's it's ridiculously cheap.
There's a lot of people that say, I just don't want to pay for more storage. Okay.
Then lose stuff.
Right. Then you have to delete stuff.
Yeah.
Or save it to your computer and delete it from Google. Well, then I can't see it on my other computer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then if that dies.
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
And if that system dies, because hard drives don't always give you the warning that they're going to go south on you, and you lose all that, you know, documentation or photos, oh, well.
You know, well. Can you get it back for me? No.
Nope.
No is the answer. No, we cannot. No. And back them up. Don't be lazy.
A lot of times, especially, you get pictures in your email or pictures in your messaging program. Then you save it in your photos library, and it is duplicated.
Right.
So it is okay, then, to delete it from your email.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you're, like, I keep saying this, if you're already paying for Amazon Prime because you want the TV stuff or you want the free shipping, you get unlimited photo storage. Why are you not taking advantage of it? Why are you not taking advantage of it? Go get it. You're paying for it already.
Which brings me into a point. There is a scam going around. Because all of a sudden I started getting these emails saying, oh, my Amazon Prime membership is up. I got to go to this link and renew. No, because I always renew in January.
Yep.
End of January. And so I was looking at the addresses and it's like, what the heck? Where's this going? And I said, yeah, no, get lost. Reported it as spam. But they are trying to, you know, folks that do have the Prime in that, because it is that time of year, folks. We're getting into the holiday season, and you're going to find all these folks trying to do pull scams, telling you, oh, you got to renew this, or you got to go to this site, or there's a problem with a package or something like that. And if folks are ordering stuff, might think,
That's the big one. I
better check it out. And all of a sudden, you get signed up because you clicked on it. You're signing up for a service. And they go, well, you did sign up for it. Sorry. And you get stuck paying for it.
And that's how some of the bad guys are getting around consumer protection laws, that if there's a fraudulent credit card charge, it often gets removed. But when you dispute a charge, your credit card company sends a message to the other end saying this dispute is charged. Can you prove it's valid? And the other end says, yeah, they signed up for a 6-year support plan from us. They can call whenever they want. And then the credit card company says, okay. And you don't get your money back. It's not just you're paying for this single call anymore, which is easy to dispute. It's you bought a subscription service for ongoing support anytime you need it.
Well, that's and we're charging you $120 a month.
Yeah, that's a little harder to dispute.
Right.
We even had one guy who went back and forth several times, and then the scammer produced a signed contract with his signature on it in brush script.
Nice.
Font. So they typed his name in a script font that looked like a signature.
Yep.
And so the credit card company said, here, you signed this contract. That's a valid charge. No, that's a font. I didn't sign the contract.
That's right. Look, first, you should be checking your credit every day and your bank accounts and your credit cards and your PayPal and everything else. You should be checking them every single day or twice a day.
And most banks have apps that you can set up alerts. So the charges, unusual charges will show up and alert you something happened?
Yep. I get that. In fact, I got to set that up on my new phone.
Yeah.
I have a new phone, and I'm constantly remembering things that aren't set up on the new phone yet.
Yeah, my Canandaigua National, they'll call me, did you authorize to do this? And I go,
we see
no.
that a lot in
All
our
right.
store.
Thank you. And they said, we're going to refuse it. Just wanted to let you know. I go, gee, thank you.
We see that a lot in our store because we sell computers, which are relatively expensive items, which are a relatively unusual charge. So quite frequently, someone will make the charge. It gets denied in our system. Their phone goes ding. And there's a message from their bank saying, are you making this charge? And they say, yes, I am. And then it goes through.
Yep. I once got a call from my bank saying, did you just buy 6 fur coats in Florida this morning?
Yeah.
No, I did not. Okay, we're canceling your credit card. Come and get another. Blah, blah, blah. It just, you got to be aware that these things are going to happen, and you got to be careful. It's one reason I tend to use my phone to pay for everything I can now, because it uses a one-time code, one-time
some of the credit card companies used to have one-time credit card services they offered, and they've all sort of stopped.
Yeah.
Mostly because Apple and Google were doing it for you.
Exactly right. So when I pay with my phone, it's a unique code that is not ever used again. And so consequently, if somebody does steal that code, it doesn't do them any good.
Yeah, because it's only good that one time.
Right. So
sometimes called a virtual credit card.
Virtual credit card. I tend to use that for everything now. Both my bank and my PayPal do that. So I'm good there.
There was a company, I'm trying to find if they're still around, and the fact that I can't find them makes me think they're not. They used to do virtual credit cards where you could lock a card number to a vendor. So this one credit card will only work with, you know, Kmart.
Well,
and this
nice.
One credit card will only work with Target. So if it gets stolen and someone tries to use it at another company, it gets denied.
That's a nice idea, too.
Yeah, it's like a bounce feature.
Yeah. But there are a lot of features that are out there to help you, but not a lot of ways to know that they're out there to help you.
You know, we can't stress enough, folks. Now the holidays are gearing up. They're going to be gearing up, too. And all these scams are going to be out there just trying to get your money or, you know, like we've said before also, is don't be click happy.
Right.
Take the time right now when you're going through different stuff, when you're going to these sites, and make sure that you're not clicking on something, because there's a number of them you can click on. And that's a clicking and saying, yes, I accept these terms. And like Steve was saying, getting yourself into, you know, a 5-year contract that, well, yeah, you call any time and get their services, whether you need it or not. You clicked on it and said, yeah, sign me up for it, because you didn't take the time to read it.
Yep. It's a real problem. And we get the scams are everywhere. I once got a call that said, I'm calling for your daughter. She's in a foreign country. She's had her bag stolen. Can you send money?
Yep, lost a passport or something.
And I thought to myself, okay, hold on a second. I turned to my daughter, who was sitting next to me on the couch, and said, are you in Mexico right now? She said, what is wrong with you? Okay.
But kidnapped grandchild scam is really common.
Yep. What you do is you immediately put them on hold and call the person that this is about. Call your grandchild, call your son or daughter. And if they answer the phone, you say, have you been kidnapped? No. Yep. Hang up on the other person.
Yeah.
But they're so good at panicking you and
oh, yeah,
making
fear.
You not think to call the other person. So we had a customer come into our store. He bought in $5,000 worth of iTunes gift cards. And it's trying to return it. And no, because they're probably gone already. Because he didn't stop to think to call his grandson first. He just raced to the store and bought the cards.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. On the scams, folks, if they tell you to go out and get YouTube gift cards or Target gift cards, anything else other than money, hang up.
Gift cards are for gifts. I've been seeing a lot of gift card kiosks are now having signs up. If someone is asking for a gift card for payment, it's probably a scam.
Yes.
Gift cards are for gifts.
Do not go any farther. Don't try to get yourself all upset or anything else. If it's that important, they'll call back. But anybody that wants a gift card for payment, no. It's a scam. Hang up.
I get gift cards every year as stocking stuffers. Mm-hmm. They're gifts.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of stores are now training their clerks to be wary of people buying a lot of gift cards.
Yep. Yeah.
Are you sure, you know, you're not getting scammed?
I got that last year. I only bought like 4 or 5 of them. I forget the number, but it was low. And I'm an old guy.
There's more than one.
Yeah. So they said to me, why are you buying these? They're stocking stuffers for my...
Yep.
Kidding my friends and okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were fine with it.
We had a customer, the bad guy kept her on the phone, on the cell phone, made her go to a store, warned her only buy $100 or $200, go through this line, go back into the store, get some more, make sure you go to a different line.
Wow.
They took her for $20,000.
Yeah. Ouch.
Be wary. Look, anybody can fall for these things. It doesn't make you dumb or stupid or anything.
They panic
else.
You. They
panic
stop you thinking.
They're very good at that. Yep. That's their job.
In fact, we say the more dire the message is, the more likely it's fake.
Yeah.
Don't turn your computer off or all your files are going to be erased.
No.
Probably not.
I got a call from a friend of mine. It was speaking to him.
Yeah.
It was
Don't turn your computer off. There's a virus and a bug and click here, call this, no, do this.
I said, what is it in there? He said, that's why I'm calling. I said, well, which machine is this? He said, it's my Chromebook. Okay. Okay. Hold the power button down until it shuts up. It says don't do that. Who are you going to believe, me or them? I got the thing that's on my Chromebook that said your Windows machine.
Yeah. Just a few years ago.
Yeah.
Your Windows machine is infected. Please do not shut down and call this number.
Yep.
Remember the scene in the IT crowd? Jen has a virus. And he looks at the screen. Oh, my God. I haven't seen that one since the 80s. And she goes, no, it's just the way I like it. You like those Windows popping up?
Well, it scares me. You know, it puts a fear into folks.
We had a guy whose computer was, he had a Chromebook. And he was very upset with it because there were so many. He said he couldn't read the screen. There were so many ribbon bars, what do you call them?
Yeah,
toolbars
across the top. So many of them that he had maybe an inch of visible window at the bottom.
Yeah,
I said, well, I got hacked. No. You installed all of these. Yeah,
every one of them.
Mm-hmm. No, I didn't. Yeah, you did. That's the only way they could get on here. There is no other mechanism.
I have to go, well, then someone else using your computer installed them.
Right.
Well, that's the other.
No one else used my computer.
And it was you.
And that's the other thing,
folks. It snuck
in
on one of those things you agreed to without reading the fine print.
Right. Because when you're downloading a software package, quite often they add other payloads to it. And they're add-ons. You can still install the original software. Say I'm downloading, Photoshop. But it had all this other bloatware that it wanted to install. And it'll ask you, do you want to install McAfee? You can click deny.
Right.
Or skip and go on to the next one.
Or just no.
Yeah.
It'll give you options. You do not have to accept it to install the original package.
But all we're interested in is next.
And then you wind up getting those toolbars and all these other items added to your machine.
Right. It's not that you said yes to these things. It's that you didn't say no.
Or decline.
That's how it works.
Yep.
So that's going back to, that's being click happy.
Yep.
Pay attention to every screen. Never click on anything until you've read and understood what it's asking.
Yeah. Because like
so many people don't understand and just say yes. Well, if you don't understand, stop, ask someone, Google it.
Or say no,
yeah.
Yeah, or if you get these scams that say, you know, your bank account or this or that, you know what? There's still this thing called the telephone. You don't have to go to the computer. You can shut the computer down, pick up that phone and use it for, like they used to back in the 50s, dial that number and call the bank. You could probably talk to a live person and ask them questions, and they'll answer it.
Yeah, you can make phone calls on those things.
I've got a phone icon on this thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Holy moly.
It's not just a mobile computing device.
Yeah.
Who knew?
So they'll be glad to answer your questions, especially if you have doubts about it. And like I was saying before, though. Especially this time of year, they know they're used to folks getting scammed. I don't know of too many banks that don't know or haven't heard the crying stories of folks who, oh, I just got soaked for $5,000 or whatever dollars.
And scams have been around forever. The first phone call was, Watson, come here, I need you. The second phone call was, do you need car insurance?
Yeah, right. We're calling about your warranty.
Yeah. So even before phones and mail order catalogs, there were the groups of they call them the travelers,
right?
Yeah, you know, I'll reshingle your roof half down and half when I'm done. You give them half the money, they disappear.
They disappear. That's exactly right. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. It was good. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back here next week with a whole other 2 hours of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites. Once again, before we go, I want to thank all our veterans, those folks who have put themselves in harm's way to assure our safety, our security, and our freedom. Thank you to each and every one of you. Your sacrifices mean more than we can say. Thank you for your service. It's a trite thing to say, but it's so true. So thanks to each and every one of you. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites. We'll see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?